This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Cruising here as we welcome you into hour two of Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network. SiriusXM, channel 158, YouTube TV, VSiN Watch app, wherever you're watching or listening, we appreciate it. Alongside Ariel Epstein, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Coming up in just a little bit, we'll have Ian McMillan of Sports Illustrated stop by, give out some of his bets for the John Deere Classic, which, by the way, we also had David Behrman join us in hour one. He gave out some different head-to-head props, some outrights, some top 10s and top 20s he really liked. If you missed any of the show, remember you can always download Money Moves in podcast form as well, wherever you get your podcasts, and we put those out pretty quickly each hour after the show. So make sure if you miss anything, you're looking for certain guests or certain topics, we cover it all, available in podcast form. Got plenty of Major League Baseball to talk about too, Ariel, including two games that are already in action. The A's are up 2-1 on Tampa Bay right now. The Rays were a good favorite. Now the Athletics minus 119. Run total 8.5 in that one on your updated lines. The Cardinals and Pirates still scoreless where things sit right now. Low total just in the second inning live at 6.5. And now we're about to get into that portion of the schedule where we have the first game of a handful of doubleheaders that we're going to see. And we were just kind of talking a little bit in the commercial break and you went, oh, I don't like doubleheaders. Why as a bettor is that something that you're not a fan of?
I love them as a fan, but as a bettor, Stormy, doubleheaders are just so tough to predict when it comes to who's in the starting lineup in the first and second game. How are they going to utilize the bullpens in the first and second game? Are they going to, in the first game, maybe not try to use as many arms because they have to use them for game two? Who pitches better or worse in the daytime? Like, day-night splits are a real thing. Who hits better in the day and nighttime? Those are a real thing. And then is anyone going to be tired later on? Or are they conserving their energy in the first game because they know they have to play a second game? There's a lot mentally in a doubleheader that you just can't quantify. I usually tend to stay away from them because they just scare the heck out of me.
Well, with that in mind, I'm going to put you to the test here and see if you can at least give us a little bit of insight into these first three games because they're about to get underway in the next 5 minutes or so. So any thoughts you have, even if you don't love them, would be helpful. We've got the Padres and Phillies, Nick Pivetta and Mick Abel going head-to-head. San Diego, minus 120, road favorite here, run total 9, the first of these three.
Yeah, so in this Phillies game, it's not so much for game one as I like it better for game two. However, Kyle Schwarber, the Phillies on the Phillies, he's had at least one hit in 60% of his last 20 games and 70% of his last 10. Schwarber's gone over a half a hit in 70% of his last 20 home games, and the Phillies are home. Schwarber's 0-5 against Nick Pivetta, who's getting the starting game one. But in game two against Dylan Cease, he's 3-for-7 with a double and two homers. Just either way, Schwarber does hit well at home, and he's been getting at least a hit in each game. So that's one prop that I was looking at for Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, to your point, though, that second game is the more intriguing one to me as well, coming up at 3:15 Pacific, 6:15 Eastern. You got Dylan Cease and Christopher Sanchez on those respective hills. That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, it should be a good one later on tonight. And for Detroit and Washington, Tyler Holton, he's a lefty, and he's getting Washington. So Washington recently, just looking at how they might hit against lefties, if you wanted to look at something first five. Washington, I'm just getting the updated numbers. They're kind of middle of the pack 14, so that doesn't really help us. I don't have much on those two games. Again, I don't like to really look at doubleheaders. Milwaukee and the Mets, at least you have Freddie Peralta on the road, Clay Holmes at home. Freddie Peralta, I typically will back at home, but on the road, he's a little bit more of a wild card. So I know it's horrible. I wish that I had more action, but I just am very nervous about any kind of doubleheaders, Stormy. I don't like them.
No, it's good. And I think that this is another important thing just from a betting education standpoint for our audience, that just because you have games available doesn't mean you have to bet them. Sometimes the best bet is no bet. If you're not confident in something or your thought process and the way that you like to prep for games doesn't make you feel comfortable, you don't have to fire on something. And that's a beautiful part of a slate like today, too. We have a ton of options across the board, so don't feel obligated. We just wanted to give you a little bit of insight in these first couple games because they are about to get underway. That said, because we do have so many games available to us, where did your eye go initially as you were looking at the card today? Was there a prop or a side or anything that really stood out to you right away?
Surprise, surprise, and this is not a homer play at all because obviously I'm taking an under and an over on the other side.
We're going to the Yankees.
We're going Yankees-Jays. I said it yesterday. I said it the day before. We bet unders when facing the Toronto Blue Jays, and Will Warren has a 4.5 K prop. Under was around -105. I liked his under. He's gone under in 2 of 3. Both road games went under as well. And then he's getting Toronto, averaging 4 strikeouts a game. 7 of the last 10 righties to face Toronto went under 4.5 Ks. On the other side, we're sleeping on Jose Berríos. He's the Toronto Blue Jays starter today. You get +110 for his over 5.5 Ks. He's only had 2 starts this year at home against high K rate lineups, and he had at least 8 strikeouts in both those starts. Overall this year, Berríos went over 5.5 Ks in 4 of 6 starts. And he had 6-8 against the Yankees last season. He faced the Yankees earlier this year in the Bronx, only had 4. So when something happens multiple times in the past, but didn't happen the first time, yet the Yankees are a higher K rate team, Berríos at home is a different pitcher, and I would take the plus money play here, Stormy.
We love a good plus money prop. And a good reminder, too, we all know Arielle Epstein is the prop queen. Make sure you follow Prop Queen Sports. You get the newsletter. You go to the website, all of those things, because she puts so much work, time, and effort into the stats and information that you're compiling every day. And it pays off. I mentioned it off the top of the show in hour one. I admittedly doubted you yesterday on a couple of props, most notably that Max Fried one. I was like a little sick to my stomach. I was like, I don't know how you're going to like sweating that one out. He only had 2 strikeouts, so the system is working for you. Keep doing what you're doing. Let's continue to go down the board here a little bit. One pitching matchup that at least caught my eye, we have Shota Imanaga back on the hill once again. Mm-hmm. For the Cubs, -164 home favorites there against the Guardians, but this Cleveland team has been plucky. Run total in this one sitting 8. Was there anything that stood out in that game?
Yeah, Imanaga's in his second start coming off the IL, which makes me like him a bit. His strikeout number was 4.5, and 19 of the last 21 lefties have gone over this against Cleveland. These are the teams that you have drastic lefty-righty splits on. The Guardians don't strike out as much against righties as they do against lefties, so you get to see these discrepancies in the market. I have faded Imanaga before, and I've never liked myself for it. But now that Imanaga's in his second start off the IL, I feel a bit more comfortable taking an over for him as opposed to how I was in his first start off the IL. I would definitely keep an eye on that one with Imanaga, and hopefully he continues to be good for the Cubs and stay healthy.
Yeah, that first start last Thursday at St. Louis gave you 5 innings, no runs, just 1 hit, 3 strikeouts in that start. Hunter Brown is pitching against the Rockies today. Astros had a great June, best record, in fact, in Major League Baseball during the month. He has been tremendous. I was looking at just the prices of this one because it is against the Rockies. Even with it being on the road, the run line price is -175. If you want to go -2.5 on the alt run line, it's around -120. The prices to fade the Rockies at home are that steep. Is that not crazy?
It's not, because you're getting Austin Gomber on the mound, who's a lefty, and the Astros are the 5th best offense in baseball against southpaws this year. Gomber is terrible, and I know his wife's like a wag and Instagram famous and TikTok famous, but he's not. He is for sure not. And he's in Colorado, which is one of the worst places to be when you're not a good pitcher. Hunter Brown is a good pitcher. So not only, I mean, obviously Houston -260, way too steep a price. Hunter Brown over 6.5 Ks intrigued me. It's around -135. He's gone over this in 3 of 4 against high K rate teams. The Rockies are averaging 6 strikeouts a game, which is a lot. 33 overs, 25 unders. This is what's amazing. 7 of the last 10 righty starters to face the Rockies have gone over 6.5 strikeouts. So you're telling me 7 of the last 10 righties to start against Colorado's have at least 7 strikeouts. Not everyone's that good. Paul Skenes, Tarik Skubal, Gerrit Cole, those are pitchers that get 7 or more strikeouts a game. So for 7 of the last 10 to go against the Rockies, and I have the list. I can go through the list of people who have been on this list. Quinn Priester had 11 strikeouts against the Rockies. Brandon Pfaadt, Merrill Kelly. Let me see who else. Mike Soroka, Grant Holmes had 15 strikeouts against the Rockies. There are obviously big names on that list, like a Spencer Strider or Yoshinobu Yamamoto. But we're talking like these B-list pitchers who get double-digit strikeouts against the Rockies. Hunter Brown is a very good pitcher, and he went over 6.5 the last time he pitched at Coors 2 years ago. So I have no issue taking over 6.5 at Coors for Hunter Brown.
I am all about it. I love the conviction as well. Okay, we've got last 90 seconds here. Anything else you want to get to? I know we will have best bets at the very end of the hour, but what else should the people know here early if they can't join us later?
There were a couple of hitter props that also stood out today. You could take a look at Abraham Toro of the Red Sox under 1.5 total bases. He's gone under this in 60% of his last 10 home games, 65% of his last 20 overall. He's hitting 271 at home, but 300 on the road, and he's never faced Nick Martinez before, so advantage goes to the pitcher. And then Arizona's right fielder, Randall Grichuk, under 1.5 total bases. This is something he's hit 80% of his last 20 games. Even at home, he's gone under 75% of his last 20 home games. Grichuk's hitting just 246, which is his worst batting average in 3 years. It's a small sample size, but he's 0-2 against the Giants starter, Landon Rupp. Under 1.5 total bases for Arizona's right fielder, Randall Grichuk.
Under 1.5 total bases, the Diamondbacks minus 148, home favorites in that spot against the Giants. San Francisco available plus 122, full run total for the game, 8.5. We're going to take our first time out of this hour. When we come back, we are diving back into the AFC North. We spoke very heavily about the Ravens and Steelers earlier in hour one, so maybe shift gears, give a little bit more attention to the Cincinnati Bengals, as little attention as possible to the Browns, but we'll still talk about them. And just had a little breaking news in the NBA. You won't want to miss it. Stick around. More Money Moves coming up after this.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We've got some breaking news in the NBA as we welcome you back to Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Ariel Epstein and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And the news surrounding your New York Knicks, girl, looks like you might have a head coach after all. Shams Charania tweeting a moment ago, the New York Knicks are expected to land on two-time NBA Coach of the Year Mike Brown as the franchise's next head coach. Of course, this coming off Tom Thibodeau being fired following the Eastern Conference Final loss to the Pacers. What do you make of the hire? Instant reaction.
The Knicks have had Mike Brown in the back of their mind since 5 years ago when hiring Tom Thibodeau. The Knicks went to hire Tom Thibodeau, and the runner-up was Mike Brown. Even though there were all these different names being thrown around, it appears that the Knicks knew who in the back of their mind their guy was once, I'm sure, others were ruled out by saying they maybe didn't want to go work for James Dolan. Looks as if they got the yes man for Dolan, and it looks like it's going to be Brown for the head coach, Mike Brown of the Knicks.
I love that you mentioned, though, some other people that they went through the process. Maybe he was in the back of their mind as their safety net. Like, I think Mike Brown was right. Kind of like the girl. I don't know how to describe. Like, you know how you have a girl that you maybe a guy really, really wants to go out on a date with. He'll do anything to have her, but he still needs a date for the dance regardless. And so when inevitably the hot girl says no, this is your next choice. That's what Mike Brown feels like in my mind, because they tried to request interviews for 5 different candidates that were already with other teams, and they all said no.
It's not surprising that people wouldn't want to come to New York and be under James Dolan, who has not been someone so pleasant to work with in the past. Seems like Mike Brown, who has had very good experience. I mean, he brought the Kings to back-to-back 40-plus win seasons for the first time since the early 2000s. He made the Kings relevant again. The Knicks don't need to become relevant again. They just were this year. They've been in the playoffs now for the last couple of seasons. But the Knicks were... The Knicks seem to have some, like, I'm curious how it's going to change the way the Knicks are this year, because they just played for Thibodeau the last 5 years. And now that Thibodeau's out, are they going to be better because they actually aren't going to play full minutes? Or is it going to, like, I'm very curious how this coaching style change is going to change things up for the Knicks, because the poor Mike Brown, he comes in and this team doesn't make it back to the Eastern Conference Finals. Nonetheless, earlier, gets out of the playoffs. I feel bad for him and what's going to happen to him in New York.
Yeah, which is crazy to think about, too, because he had, what was it, in Sacramento, where he's coach of the year. The team's unbelievable. They have the best rated offense in the NBA. He's axed in year three because things didn't go the way that Sacramento wanted it. If the Knicks are this short of a leash with a guy who brought them to the most prominence they've had in a quarter century, what are they going to do if this guy that they hire and thinks is going to be their answer doesn't deliver? It's very interesting. He's 4-time champ as a top assistant in Golden State and San Antonio, coached under Steve Kerr and Greg Popovich, coached many a superstar. We mentioned it already, 2-time coach of the year. So I think it is a great hire from that standpoint. But when you clearly wanted other people and this is the guy you have to settle on, I think that's tough. That said, given the prominence that this team has gotten to, the talent that they do have, and a wide open Eastern Conference, as we've referenced a handful of times throughout the course of the show today and this week, they are tied for third on the board to win an NBA title, this before they even had a head coach announced, at plus 850. And second in the conference just to the Cavs, but I mean, it's a matter of sense there. Cleveland plus 250, New York plus 285.
And if you look around, some of the boards have the Knicks and the Cavs at 8-1 together. The second best odds on the board behind OKC, making the Knicks and the Cavs your front runners to win the Eastern Conference. There are really high standards here. And I know that we were talking about this in the last segment. The Cavs and the Knicks, as long as they stay healthy, you know that Tatum's out for the Celtics. I don't understand the Magic number at plus 550. I look at the Magic like the Minnesota Twins. I don't understand how you have them so high up. I know that they're defensively a very sound team, and now it's a third year of this young team coming up. But something about the Magic, just offensively, they're so inconsistent. But the Celtics, the Bucks, the Pacers, the Heat, there are a lot of question marks surrounding these teams, especially with Giannis and the Bucks, especially with the Celtics and the Pacers without their two best players in Jason Tatum and Tyrese Halliburton. And again, if Mike Brown doesn't get the Knicks deep into the playoffs in year one, no, they're going to be calling for his head.
Again, here is how that Eastern Conference lays out in totality. The Cavs plus 250, New York plus 285, Magic, as you referenced, plus 550, the 76ers and Celtics both at 11-1, and the Bucks and Hawks 12-1 prices. Those numbers, compliments of DraftKings, New York, a top three candidate to win an NBA title. For those of you just joining us, it appears, and it is not officially official, but Shams Charania is saying that the Knicks are closing in on making Mike Brown, 2-time former head coach of the year in the NBA, their newest man in NYC. We do need to get back to a little NFL conversation here as we're previewing the AFC North today. Reminder, our NFL betting guide officially got released earlier this week. VSiN.com/subscribe. You can get access to everything we do on the website, all of our digital and video content, as well as this guide and every other guide that comes up throughout the course of the year at VSiN.com/subscribe. $175 gets you that pro access, but this guide is incredible. Zach Cohen specifically in this guide broke down the AFC North, and we've been talking about a lot of those details today. Earlier, we were really honing in on the Ravens and Steelers, especially with Pittsburgh, all the news that they've had this offseason, but we haven't given much due to the Cincinnati Bengals, who are the second shot to Baltimore in the division. Joe Burrow, who came off of last season having an MVP caliber year, Ariel, he had the most pass yards, most passing touchdowns in the NFL. The offense was so good in large part because they, quite frankly, had to be because the defense was so bad. What is your general consensus feel for what Cincinnati can be this year?
If there was a team in the AFC North that I had to bet an over win total on, I would actually bet it over on the Cincinnati Bengals. The team is, although defensively has a lot of holes, they still offensively can put up a ton of numbers. The offense, and when you look at the schedule, their schedule is, obviously the opponents are the same, but the schedule layout is much easier for the Bengals than it is for the Steelers and for the Ravens. They have a decent start to the year with Cleveland and Jacksonville, so you get things under your belt. Maybe you get things off on the right foot. Minnesota, Denver, winnable games if you could win a shootout, which we know in Minnesota, if you're in Minnesota like they are, you could win a shootout there. I think, and I'm not going to go through every game, but I just think that the schedule for the Bengals has a lot more easy game, hard game, easy game, hard game, yeah, as opposed to the Ravens, who are front-loaded and back-loaded with tough games. The Steelers also have a really few tough stretches. The Bengals don't have as much of a tough stretch. They just have the sprinkle of tougher games. So I do think that the Bengals could go over 9.5 wins, and it's pretty telling for a team that struggled so much last season. A team in the Bengals that didn't make the playoffs, finished third in this division with just 9 wins. The Steelers had 10, and yet the Steelers have a lower win total this year than the Bengals.
Yeah. I think that the start, and you referenced how the season starts on the schedule for Cincinnati, is going to be important for a team that is notorious for coming out the gates poorly. Even last year, they were the biggest favorite of any team in week one against the New England Patriots, and they lost that game outright. I was going through their seasons under Zach Taylor. Since he took over as head coach, the Bengals are 1-13 the first 2 weeks of the season, 8-15-1 the first 4 weeks. This year, there is no excuse. You open the season against the Browns, who you know are terrible. You get the Jaguars, who, yes, they're trying to figure things out, but they're still the Jags at the end of the day, and you get that game at home. The Vikings with a quarterback that we don't know what J.J. McCarthy is going to be just yet. You have that opportunity to ease into the season. You're 5.5-point favorites the first 2 games of the year. Those will be critical in how I view this win total and what I think the Bengals can be, especially because the defense is problematic. They've got all the talent in the world on offense, but defensively, we still don't know what's going on with Trey Hendrickson's contract. We mentioned the Shamar Stewart element of it all, their first round draft pick on the defensive line. He's not signed yet. The only change they made to their secondary was moving on from Mike Hilton, who they let walk in free agency, despite that secondary ranking 27th overall in the NFL and gave up 30 passing touchdowns, 29th in the league. The Bengals defense in total, 7th worst in points per game allowed and total yards allowed per game, 31st in red zone efficiency and overall efficiency. And you want to know the worst part about that for this defense? Going through the stats, they numerically played the number one easiest offensive opposing schedule in the league. This year, they're going to play one of the most difficult. So that doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence in this unit being better. I know that they brought in Al Golden as their defensive coordinator over from Notre Dame. They have high hopes for what he can do to turn around that unit. But at the end of the day, personnel is still a big part of that problem. So last year, when they went 5-0 down the stretch, the defense was playing Cooper Rush, Mason Rudolph, Will Levis, DTR, Russell Wilson, and they're winning all of those games. You're not going to have that opportunity this year. So just keep that in mind as well. We haven't even
at least they're not on Hard Knocks.
I can't wait to see the quarterback thing with Joe Burrow, by the way. That's coming out, I think, next week. So that'll be interesting to see. We got to take a timeout. Ian McMillan joins us coming up next, talking John Deere Classic and more.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Some mixed results on our fireworks conversation. Worth noting, John chiming in on the chat said, Stormy, you're right. All fireworks look and sound the same. Love the show. Appreciate that. Meanwhile, Evan over here said L on the Stormy take about the fireworks. So mixed reviews. I think I'm right in that fireworks are weak, but we shall see. Ariel Epstein, Stormy Bonatoni with you back here on Money Moves, getting you set for what is an American holiday coming up on Friday. Meanwhile, Canada Day yesterday is how we welcome in our great guest, Ian McMillan from North of the Border. As we welcome him in via the Progressive guest line. Hello, my friend. What's going on, buddy?
Go Canada.
Hello, hello. Thank you for bringing up Canada Day. Yeah, people forget. Yesterday was Canada Day. It was great. I kind of agree. I'm not a huge fireworks guy, but they are nice when you kind of live on a high floor in an apartment and you can kind of watch them from your balcony, which I was able to do for Canada Day last night. So that was nice. Now am I going to go somewhere specifically for fireworks? No, but watch them from the balcony is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's I think they're nice to see. They're fine. My just thought was, yeah, when you've seen fireworks before, you've seen them all, and as long I just don't want them being fired up at 3 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to sleep and I'm just getting woken up from my slumber in a panic.
Sure.
I did have a follow-up question for you about Canada Day though. How tough was it to celebrate? Or maybe it was more celebratory for you that you have somebody who never really showed up to the extent you needed him to in the playoffs now in Las Vegas. How are we feeling about the Mitch Marner trade?
I feel good, to be completely honest. I don't hate Mitch Marner. This had to happen, though. It wasn't working for the team. It wasn't working for him. The press conference he did wasn't great, where he's like basically like, halfway through the season. He already knew he was going to go to Vegas. He was talking at the Four Nations tournament to guys playing for the team, want to know what it was like to live in Vegas. I wish him well, is what I'll say. He didn't show up in big moments and big games continuously for every year that he was a Toronto Maple Leaf. He's a very skilled player. He's a very talented player. I wish him well in Vegas. I will not miss him, personally.
Sounds like it's pretty consensus, and Stormy said it had to happen. But we're looking at the Stanley Cup for the upcoming season. Panthers, of course, still the favorites at 7-1. Hurricanes plus 850. Vegas plus 850. Is that top three correct, or is there somebody else that you've got your eye on?
Yeah, I was told all season there's no way the Panthers were going to bring all their guys back, and they brought all their guys back. So the Panthers maybe they're deserving of being even shorter favorites than what they are, to be completely honest. I don't know how the Panthers don't win the cup again. They have the exact same team coming back. Bobrovsky is getting a little bit old in between the pipes. He had a bit of a down year, especially in the regular season, but still, I mean, the Panthers are going to be the team to beat. And now, me being a Maple Leafs guy, we once again see them, you know, second round, most likely at best it'll be in the second round. So that's killing me. I was really hoping they're going to lose a couple of their players. I truly think it's going to be the Panthers again. I know that's a chalky thing to say. Maybe we see the Stars out of the West. The Golden Knights now have no chance because they just spent a ton of money on a guy who doesn't show up in the playoffs. So it'll probably be whatever team comes out of the East. I do actually like the Avalanche is another team that I think has a chance. I think we got a Panthers-Avalanche Stanley Cup final. I was disappointed by the Avs these past playoffs, but they have a good team, a lot of talent. But still, it's the Panthers to lose.
And they're bringing a ton of guys back, too. But what I will say about your Golden Knights take is, hey, sometimes, like the great Sheryl Crow once said, a change will do you good. Let Mitch Marner live. I think he's going to thrive in that top six here in Vegas. That said, Ian McMillan joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, senior editor for Sports Illustrated. Follow him on X at Ian McBets, Bacon Bets Pod as well. Let's shift gears here and get into a little golf, because the PGA Tour season continues Thursday at TPC Deer Run for the John Deere Classic out there in Illinois. Last week's Rocket Classic winner, we got Pod Geeter in the field. Ben Griffin is your 16-1 favorite. So this is not the typical highbrow, star-studded field that we're going to get at the British Open here in a couple weeks. But what did you make of the field, and is this a potential opportunity on the betting board?
Yeah, I certainly think it's an opportunity. Yeah, like you said, not a lot of big names, but really from a betting standpoint, that sometimes gives you a lot of value. Because what, Ben Griffin, you said, is the betting favorite right now? Yeah. Like, no disrespect to Ben Griffin, but I mean, there's guys further down the odds list are going to have some value. A name that's sticking out to me, and a lot of guys in that 30 to 40 to 1 price range, I think, are looking pretty good. One of them is Bud Cauley, coming in this week 15th in the entire PGA Tour in total strokes gained, 9th in the field in true strokes gained approach over the past 3 months. So he's a guy that's playing really well. So I think if you want to stay away from the top of the odds list, which I certainly would, I mean, those guys at the top don't really seem all that like great value bets to me. That 30 to 41 range is where you're going to find some value. And that's the positive of these types of events. Whereas, you know, in a major or some of the signature events, it's kind of hard to look past the top 10 names on the odds list. But at the John Deere Classic, you can certainly try to find some value further down it.
Ian, for people that don't want to wait until Sunday for any kind of payout, if you want a first-round leader, who could we look at?
Yeah, Andrew Putnam, 80-1 to be the first-round leader this week. He's a guy who I was looking a little bit for outrights, but he is a guy who I think he might have one of the longest streaks of PGA Tour starts without a win, so I don't trust him to win the whole thing. But he is coming off back-to-back top 10 finishes. He's rounding into that strong form that he had early in the season, and round one has always been his best round of the events this year. He's actually fourth on the PGA Tour in round one scoring average at 68.07. So guy who's in good form, who always plays really well in the first round in a wide open field. Andrew Putnam, 80-1, I think is a pretty good look if you don't want to wait all 4 days to try to get a winner at the John Deere Classic.
In 2025, we love some instant gratification where we can find it. And at that price, absolutely. We have Why Not Wednesday as a segment on the show, and I feel like that would have been a prime why not candidate. Let's throw it on there. Looking toward the Major League Baseball slate today, I know we've got a ton of action, a ton of games. Was there one or two plays that really stood out to you above the rest as you went through the card?
Yeah, a little bit of a tricky spot here with all these doubleheaders that are going on today. So I was trying to, for the most part, stick to the games that do not have doubleheaders. One of them is the Rangers and the Orioles. I like the Rangers a lot in that spot. Obviously, a pretty significant starting pitching advantage with Eovaldi on the mound, 1.87 ERA, 0.871 whip. The Rangers' offense bad all season, a little bit better over the past month. Their season-long OPS, 662, it's up to 697 over the past 30 days. Hopefully, that can be enough to take down a struggling Orioles team. An Orioles team, I think, has disappointed a lot of us this season. Hasn't disappointed me because I'm a Blue Jays fan and we are looking fantastic. Another bet that I'm looking at, if you're looking for a player prop, Logan Gilbert tonight. A little bit of a more niche player prop, under 4.5 hits allowed. I got it at -130 for tonight's late game. He has been absolutely fantastic when the Mariners are playing at home this season. Teams are batting just 131 against Logan Gilbert when he's pitching in Seattle, and now he's taking on a Royals lineup that has a batting average of 237 over the past month. That's 23rd in the majors in that time frame. So he's allowed only five hits. He's allowed five hits just once in his six home starts this season. So with him pitching at home tonight against the struggling Royals lineup, Logan Gilbert under 4.5 hits allowed at -130.
I like that for Logan Gilbert. He's always so good at home. We are officially in trade deadline month for Major League Baseball, Ian. How do you approach the futures market when the trade deadline's approaching?
Yeah, you got it. I think a good thing to do is to buy low on some teams who are likely going to make a move at the trade deadline. I tweeted it out last night. I didn't get a lot of great responses because the Blue Jays won. Obviously, my Blue Jays guy, and I tweeted out, when is it time we start looking at this Blue Jays team as a World Series contender? Now, I'm biased. I'm a Jays fan. Obviously, I'm going to think they're a little bit better than they probably are. But I think they are a good example of a team that has a lot of upside, but that has just a few
holes. They always do.
That they're likely... Yeah, yeah. Yes, correct. They do, but come on, they have been hot. They beat your Yankees here a couple nights in a row, and now all we need, I think, is maybe someone to fill in the rotation, maybe like a Zach Gallen. And I think this Blue Jays team, if they get hot at the right time at the end of the regular season, can go on a little bit of a deep run here. Now, like I said, I'm being biased with that, but the point still stands. I think right now, heading into the trade deadline, you want to target a team that's maybe a little bit further down the odds board who likely is going to try to pick up a couple of pieces, because once they pick up those pieces, the value might not be there and we might see some shift on the odds board.
Yeah, so is it all kind of about projecting not only the teams that you think could add and try to make a run, but teams that could be sellers as well that could fall off a cliff a little bit in the second half after the All-Star break?
Yeah, certainly. Absolutely. Let me ask you two this, though. Do the Blue Jays have a chance? The AL's kind of wide open, is it not? Do the Blue Jays have a shot whatsoever?
A shot? Sure. Are they going to? No. I can't trust the Blue Jays. Every year, on paper, this team was supposed to be the most young, fun. The Blue Jays were supposed to be the young, fun, up-and-coming team before the Orioles, before the Royals, before the Tigers. All three of those teams have surpassed them. And Vladdy Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, where are they? They haven't made it.
They're doing well. One game back. One game back. Heading into tonight.
They still haven't
made
it.
One game back in the Yankees. One game back. Yikes. Now's our year. I'm getting fired up for the Jays.
This was the debate that we needed here. Ian, you're awesome. Thank you so much, Betty.
Thank you so much, you too. Take care. Good luck tonight.
Ian McMillan, everybody. Make sure you check out all the work over there at Sports Illustrated, the Bacon Bets podcast as well. Guys are heating up over here. We're wrapping things up next on Monday.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We're wrapping up this Wednesday edition of Money Moves live on SiriusXM Channel 158, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, alongside Ariel Epstein, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We do appreciate everybody that's chiming in on social media today. I've gotten a couple good laughs. We talked earlier this hour about Mike Brown, it looks like, becoming the hire of the New York Knicks. The report from Shams Charania, nothing has become officially official or announced by the team yet, but it looks like that will be the hire. And I was talking about how he was kind of of like a backup plan and comparing it to when a guy is trying to find the hot. I said it very poorly. And so thank you, Scott C, for chiming in and said, Stormy, I believe the term you were looking for is side chick. You are correct. It was escaping me, but Mike Brown.
Well, it doesn't always mean side chick, though. I don't know if I agree with side chick. Side chick is you're in a relationship, but you've got a girl on the side. I look at it like prom, the same way you said about the school dance. You have the front runner. The front runner doesn't work out because she goes with like the prom king. So you end up picking the next girl who also might not work out. Then you decide, maybe I'll just take the girl from the other school because there's no competition.
And the sad thing about the Knicks is they went through five girls to get to Mike Brown finally saying yes. No, that said, do you think there should be some excitement for the Knicks, though? Because you think about the fact that this is a two. Come on, I'm trying to bring in some positivity for your team, girl. He is a two-time former NBA Coach of the Year. He helped turn that Kings offense into one of the best, it was the best offense that year in the NBA. Could he be somebody that is a new voice that works for New York? Come on.
I need to know more from the players. I need to know how the players' relationship with Mike Brown is, whether there is any, whether they know him, how the players around the league feel about him. I'd have to do more digging into how these current Knicks superstars feel. Does Jalen Brunson have any relationship with him? Does Karl Anthony Towns? You need to know that the coach coming in has respect after he was knocked out of Sacramento after, what, three seasons? What happened there that after two great seasons with the Kings turning the franchise around that you get bumped in a third season? What went wrong? That's where I'm a bit concerned about Mike Brown coming to the Knicks.
Yeah, I understand. Yet they are, as we mentioned earlier, tied for the third shot on the board to win an NBA title next year, +850, 8-1, around that range, the price on New York. Again, the news of the day in the NBA, per Sham Sharania, the New York Knicks expected to land on two-time NBA Coach of the Year Mike Brown as the franchise's new head coach to replace Tom Thibodeau, who was fired in the postseason after losing to the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Final.
And that hot dogs are better than fireworks. That was the other big talking point of the show.
Hot dogs are better than fireworks because fireworks are lame. Sorry. Oh, Brian just said hot dogs are hamburgers. I am a hot dog person through and through. Okay. I was going to save this for tomorrow, and we can get into this tomorrow as well. But I do just want to say, I bring this up 4th of July week every year, and I think it's important to make sure that for as much love as we give hot dogs, cheese-injected hot dogs need to get a little bit of respect as well. You're looking at me so grossed out.
Interesting.
Oscar Mayer has a way, and it is with cheese-injected hot dogs. They are so insanely
good. It sounds like you go straight to the bathroom.
No. Although, how much of our community is lactose intolerant? But they're amazing. They're so good, underrated, do not get the love they deserve. And this is the only problem that I have with the hot dog eating contest, Ariel, and it's a small one. It's just that they don't savor the flavor. I love a hot dog. It hurts me to watch them just like devour them so quickly and painfully that they don't get to enjoy what is the hot dog eating.
They definitely taste, they have to taste the first or second hot dog. At what point in the hot dog eating contest do you no longer taste the hot dog?
Yeah, that's true. And I know they dunk it in different stuff because it softens up the bread and changes up the flavor a little bit. I remember we had Mickey Sudo on the program either last year or the year before, and she was kind of explaining why you dip it in different stuff. It's not just to make it more consumable, but because the flavor is so repetitive that they need it to taste a little bit different, which makes a lot of sense.
I don't blame them.
Makes a lot of sense. We will do a deep dive into the hot dog eating contest tomorrow. Don't worry. We'll have bet splits. We'll have numbers. We'll have records. Get excited for that action coming up. That said, we do have best bets of the day coming up in Major League Baseball. Best bets presented by G-Bank. Our trifecta, by the way, underway. G-Bank, First Bet, and us here at VSiN all teaming up for $500 trifecta, where when you open a G-Bank Visa signature card, your first 90 days deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet. That triggers the trifecta, gives you $200 in cashback rewards on your G-Bank Visa signature card. First Bet gives you a $100 deposit match, and you get a VSiN Pro subscription, $200 value there, all wrapped up. VSiN.com/GBank is how you can get more information. It's a one-time promotion limited to customers opening a new account in response to the offer. Will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions do apply. Also, I know we have best bets, and this one wasn't one of yours, but it was one you recommended to take a look at. Wanted to give you a little shout-out because Rob Nucatola on X said he tuned in looking for a casual MLB play, wanted to fade the Rockies, but not at the ridiculous price that they have today. Heard you talking about strikeout props and got excited. So there you go.
Hey, I always love helping out when people want something, and that's the beauty of the props market. The props market allows you to bet certain things that you normally wouldn't be able to, like if it was just about the Houston Astros and back in the day, you only were able to bet sides and totals. We've got props now.
Yes. Hunter Brown should have a nice day against the Rockies today, needless to say. But what is your best bet of the day? Where are you going?
Toronto Blue Jays righty Jose Berríos over 5.5 Ks. Get it around +110. It's the underrated play of the day. Berríos, I never bet on the road, but at home, he's very different. Berríos has gone over 5.5 Ks in 4 of 6 starts against strikeout-prone lineups. When at home, Berríos has had at least 8 strikeouts in those games against these high K rate teams. Righty starters averaging just over 5 Ks a game against the Yankees. Take the over, 5.5 Ks, Jose Berríos at +110.
After you were just talking all that trash about the Blue Jays to our guy Ian McMillan last segment. How about that?
I didn't say anything about their regular season. They just can't make it to the postseason.
I'm just giving you a hard time. You're not wrong. We'll see, though. That'll be a fun team for us to follow in the second half, that's for sure. My best bet of the day is one that Ian gave out as well. I'm on the Rangers today against the Orioles. My usual co-host, JVT, always makes fun of me because he says if the Orioles don't have any haters left, it means I'm dead. I am so anti-Baltimore when it comes to baseball. I love your Ravens. I'm sorry. Don't hate me there. But this Orioles team has been such a disappointment this year. They've got Shigano on the hill today, ERA north of 4. Rays touched him up for 9 hits, 3 home runs, and 7 runs his last start. He's given up 3-plus in 4 straight in 5 of his last 6, not even getting past 5 innings in 4 of them. Orioles' bullpen, also one of the worst in Major League Baseball. Meanwhile, you've got Eovaldi on the other side, made his first start back from the IL last Friday, coming off that tricep tightness. Didn't take a full workload, wasn't a great start, but we know how good this guy is when he's on, and he said yesterday, he's feeling really good physically right now and does expect to start going deeper in games. Prior to the injury, he gave up just 3 combined earned runs in his previous 7 starts, 38 and 2/3 innings, 5th best bullpen ERA in the league backing him up. Rangers are great in the favorites role, and Ian talked about how the bats have been better as of late as well. So at home, better starter, all of the things coming up, better bullpen, -144 is a price I'm willing to lay for Texas at home today.
Don't mind it with Eovaldi at home. He's a very different pitcher there, and I think he's getting healthier at the right time.
Oh my gosh, we're getting some funny comments right now. So last 90 seconds before we leave. Brian M. says, based on the food Stormy has listed this week alone, she may live forever because she's 95% processed. Actually,
I think it's true.
I need to look up the true information behind this, but I saw like the inventor of the treadmill and the inventor of the dumbbell and like all of these things are people that actually died very early in their lives. Meanwhile, like old ladies that drink Dr. Pepper every day and smoke cigs live until they're 95.
The queen lived till like 100 and she drank 2 glasses of, what was it? She had 2 drinks a day. I forget what the exact drink was, but she had 2 drinks a day.
It's like the Jack Daniels, like all those things, those people live into their 90s and over 100. So maybe this cheese-injected hot dog situation will make me live forever. We'll see.
My grandpa lived to 87 on Chef Boyardee. So good life.
Ooh, amazing. That's what I'm talking about. And then Ariel, nothing like biting into a juicy molten lava log. Oh, just wrap it in a slice of cheese. I do that too. I don't discriminate. However, I can get cheese around the hot dog. We're doing it. And then Topher Barron giving us more alternate options for Mike Brown. A backup plan. Keeping the options open. Keeping someone on the hook. Said those are usually used by narcissists, though. So are the New York Knicks a narcissist? Maybe.
Of course they are. They celebrate like 1 playoff win. Obviously, they made it far this year. Typically, they celebrate any win. Act like you've been there.
It's that celebration was how you knew they were doomed. That and having Stephen A. Smith being one of your biggest fans. That probably is another thing that helps lead to your demise. That said, fun show as always. We'll be back here tomorrow. Same time, same place. The hot dog talk was fun today, but we're going to get serious and make
it's gonna
some
be worse tomorrow.
Yeah. So get excited. For Brian Ortega and Ariel Epstein, I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Have a great day, everybody. Good luck with your bets.